Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. If you watch television talk shows such as Phil Donahue, Jenny Jones, Oprah Winfrey, Sally Jesse Raphael, or Geraldo Rivera, do you ever get the impression from the hosts of those shows that there are any absolute moral or spiritual values? Phil Donahue's personal beliefs and moral values are on a par with barnyard animals. Jenny Jones conducts one of the most vulgar and senseless shows ever imagined by anyone. Oprah Winfrey, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Geraldo Rivera sometimes have some fairly useful shows, but they almost seem to apologize for them when they do. On the whole, the daytime talk shows have done untold harm to American moral values. They have left the impression, and not accidentally, that homosexuality, abortion, stripping, prostitution, and drinking beverage alcohol are normal and decent behavior. Although I have never heard any of the talk show hosts actually say they do not believe in any absolute moral values, there is hardly any doubt where they stand on that important issue. Larry King has been married so many times, he probably cannot keep up with them. He thinks men and women simply outgrow one another and may need to change partners to keep growing. Johnny Carson's influence on his night audience has been decidedly detrimental from almost any viewpoint one wishes to consider it. His jokes and language were off color. His bizarre marital career, his jokes about marriage, and many other facets of his 30 years on The Tonight Show have done enormous damage to our country, to the family, and to the church. And these are just a few of the television shows which advocate moral values directly contrary to the teachings of Jesus Christ. Television personalities generally, and not just talk show hosts, support homosexuality as an alternate lifestyle. They make fun of people like us who believe that homosexuality is sinful, always sinful, regardless of the circumstances. Adultery is the source of thousands of jokes in all forms of the entertainment industry, whether television, radio, popular magazines, and newspapers. Programs such as Soul Train, The Love Connection, and Studs appeal to what the apostle calls lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, and the pride of life, 1 John 2:15. Many television programs seem to serve only as a source of solicitation for immoral sexual relations. I speak especially of The Love Connection and Studs. The people behind the scenes and the hosts of these programs could legitimately be called pimps. They probably would resent such characterizations, but there is no doubt what they do and what they are. The unpleasant truth is, and we may have a hard time bringing ourselves to believe this, most of the leaders in the popular media recognize only one absolute. People who believe in absolutes are absolutely wrong. Jenny Jones probably has not pondered whether or not there are any absolutes. But we know from her comments and her behavior where she stands on moral values. Her programs, which I have seen probably a half dozen times, are pure sleaze. There is no intellectual content, no legitimate discussion of any moral issue. Her show is designed to titillate, not to inform or to educate. But the so-called intellectual community does not fare much better. The academic community in general has contributed to the belief that there are no moral values which are absolute. All values are relative. A mathematician believes that 2 plus 2 equals 4. But he denies there are absolutes in the moral realm. A science teacher knows that two parts of hydrogen and one part of oxygen make water. But he may deny stealing or lying or committing adultery is always wrong. A few years ago, when Dr. Joseph Fletcher, the leading situation ethicist in the United States, was a rising star in the ethical firmament, he made a speech at Murray State University at Murray, Kentucky. Dr. Fletcher said very dogmatically on that occasion, "Anyone who believes in absolutes is an absolute fool." Robert Usry, a professor of English at Murray State and a faithful gospel preacher, asked Dr. Fletcher if the statement he had just made was absolute. Fletcher chose not to respond to Brother Usry's question. Fletcher's statement, as any college student can tell you, was expressed in absolute terms. If anyone who believes in absolutes is an absolute fool, Dr. Fletcher has incriminated himself. If his statement were not an absolute, then no one was obligated morally or intellectually to pay any attention to what he said. If what he said were not absolutely true, it might be only partially true or absolutely false. In any case, Dr. Fletcher's observation made no logical sense. Why cannot a man as intelligent as Joseph Fletcher understand the inconsistency of his position? Incidentally, Dr. Fletcher has served for many years as a medical ethicist at the University of Virginia Medical School. His responsibility as a medical ethicist was to teach young doctors what is morally right on any given situation. Fletcher has written extensively on abortion, euthanasia, infanticide, and suicide, and approves all of these, at least when the situation demands it. How would you like to visit a physician who has swallowed hook, line, and sinker the immoral and unchristian views of Joseph Fletcher? If your doctor accepts the situation ethics of Dr. Fletcher, he would not be bound absolutely to honor your request or to serve your best interest. Your value as a human being would depend on the situation. If a situation ethicist believes that your death would benefit others, your family, the hospital staff, the scientific community, or his own pocketbook, he might allow you to die, or even hasten your death in order to serve the greater good of the human family. If this approach to ethics seems a little far-fetched, let me assure you that Joseph Fletcher and other situation ethicists unquestionably endorse it. My friends, there are countless theologians who deny all absolutes. Let me give you some disturbing examples. Wesley Baker is a Presbyterian preacher and a former professor of theology at San Francisco Theological Seminary. In 1967, Wesley Baker wrote a book, The Open End of Christian Morals, in which he endorsed the moral relativism of Joseph Fletcher. In fact, his book is nothing more than a regurgitation of Fletcher's book, Situation Ethics. Wesley Baker emphatically denies the existence of any absolute. There is no such thing as a morally defensible position. That is, to be right in any ethical situation is impossible. True, we have fallen into the habit of thinking there are right and wrong positions, and made ourselves feel clean about the first and guilty or inferior about the second. Page 29. Can you believe that anyone, theologian, professional thief, or even mafia member, would express such moral irresponsibility? Does Wesley Baker think his position is right, and the people with other positions are wrong? If he does not, he is talking utter nonsense. Obviously, he thinks his position is right, or he would not espouse it. If he does think his position is right and other positions are wrong, he has just destroyed his statement about there being no morally defensible position. Please listen to another statement from Wesley Baker's book. There are no absolutes, no unbreakable ground rules, no qualifying principles. Page 59. If there are no absolutes, then Baker's affirmation is not absolute. If his statement is not absolute, We have no obligation to believe it or even to listen to it. Only those who are trying to defend an indefensible position could be so superficial and illogical. Baker seeks to pinpoint his belief about there being no absolutes by asking these questions. Was President Truman right in ordering the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs to be dropped? Is it ever right to be involved in extramarital intimacy? Should a person lie to protect job or family? Is moral compromise ever justifiable? Baker answers his questions by saying, quite possibly, pages 59 and 60. There is certainly room for disagreement over whether or not President Truman made the right choice in having the atom bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, although I believe he saved literally thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of lives by his action. In an all-out war, does not a president have the moral obligation to get the war over and kill as few people as possible? There is hardly any doubt that President Truman's decision shortened the war and saved lives. But how can there be any doubt about the immorality of adultery or lying or moral compromise? How could a wife trust her husband if he commits adultery because the situation demanded it or even allowed it? If a man or woman will lie on one occasion, how do you know he or she will not on every other occasion? Dr. John Warwick Montgomery affirms that the only way you can tell if a situationist is lying is to give him sodium pentothal, the truth serum. If one compromises his moral values, are they really values? Churches, husbands and wives, political leaders and others have to compromise on some items, but they must not compromise on moral values. Moral values are not negotiable. Wesley Baker has a rather extensive discussion of Christ's Sermon on the Mount. He concludes his examination of Christ's great sermon by saying, Christ didn't teach morality. He wasn't interested in being known as a guide to respectable living. His own words make that quite clear. Page 123. Is Wesley Baker talking about the same Jesus about whom we read in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? If a theologian were deliberately trying to pervert the teachings of Jesus Christ, and I am not accusing Baker of doing that, how could he be more mistaken than in these words about Jesus and his Sermon on the Mount? What did Jesus mean by these words? You have heard that it was said by them of old time, you shall not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. Matthew 5, 27 and 28. Do you believe Jesus was relaxing Old Testament restrictions on committing adultery? Was our Lord attempting to teach morality in these words from the Sermon on the Mount? Do you get an idea from Christ's words that he had no interest in being a faithful guide to respectable living? How could a theologian or anyone else so completely miss the meaning of Christ's teaching? From what Jesus said about adultery, both in Matthew 5 and in other passages, do you honestly believe he thought adultery was not a moral evil? Did he think there might be extenuating circumstances when adultery might actually be healthy, as some theologians and academicians contend? Please listen carefully to these words from the very lips of the Son of God. Those things which proceed out of the mouth come forth from the heart, and they defile the man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile the man. Matthew 15, 18 through 20. Can there be the slightest doubt that Christ intended to teach morality? Was he attempting to guide his followers to respectable living? Let us examine one other example from the Sermon on the Mount. You have heard that it has been said, You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Matthew 5:43-44. As you listen to these words from Christ, did you get the impression that Jesus was teaching that it is absolutely wrong to hate your enemies, or wrong only under certain circumstances? Must we always bless them who curse us and do good to them that hate us? Are these merely suggestions for Christian behavior, or are they absolutely binding on Christ's followers? Many religious, educational, and political leaders have set the stage for situation ethics, the idea that there are no absolutes. But none has done more damage along these lines than the work of Joseph Fletcher. In 1966, Dr. Fletcher wrote a very influential book which he called Situation Ethics, The New Morality. Dr. Fletcher not only taught and may still teach at the University of Virginia Medical School, he also taught Christian social ethics at the Episcopal Theological School in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Although he served as Dean of St. Paul's Cathedral in Cincinnati and taught Christian social ethics, Dr. Fletcher is a secular humanist. How do I know that? Because he signed Humanist Manifesto No. 2 in 1973, page 28 of the Humanist Manifesto. In his book, Situation Ethics, Fletcher asks, does any girl who has relations, what a funny way to use the word, outside of marriage become a prostitute? Is it always, regardless of what she accomplishes for herself or others, is it always wrong? Is extramarital sex inherently evil? Or can it be a good thing in some situations? Does everybody have his price? And if so, does that mean we are immoral and ethically weak? Pages 17 and 18. Let me examine Fletcher's questions. Does any girl who has relations outside of marriage become a prostitute? In the first place, I never heard anyone in my life affirm such a ridiculous position. Have you? Prostitution, by definition, involves selling one's body for immoral purposes, not just having sex outside the marriage relationship. You should have no problem discerning what Fletcher was trying to do. He wanted to appear that those of us who preach against premarital sex to appear unreasonable, hard-hearted, and out of touch with reality. But if a theologian believes it is not always wrong to lie, why would it be wrong to twist the other person's moral convictions when it would serve his purposes? Fletcher's second question was, is it always wrong, regardless of what she accomplishes for herself or others, is it always wrong? Even if good might be accomplished, both for the woman and for her partner, premarital sex is wrong. Always wrong. Christians cannot do evil that good may come. Romans 3:8. Besides, whatever good might arise from an illicit relationship will be washed out in the long run in most cases. Fletcher says, but if people do not believe it is wrong to have sex outside marriage, it isn't, unless they hurt themselves, their partners, or others. Page 140. Fletcher further says, the new morality, situation ethics, declares that anything and everything is right or wrong according to the situation. Page 124. Fletcher asks, does everybody have his price? And if so, does that mean we are immoral and ethically weak? My friends, everybody does not have his price. Did John the Baptist have his price? Could he not have been a little less dogmatic in dealing with Herod? Did he have to tell him he had no right to have his brother Philip's wife? John's unwillingness to compromise, even with the king, cost him his life. How could Joseph Fletcher or any other situation ethicist stoop to say that everybody has his price? A situation ethicist should have no problem selling out his convictions. He does not have any in the first place, at least none which is always binding. Did our Lord Jesus Christ have his prize? Why in heaven's name did he have to be so uncompromising in dealing with the Jews? Did he not know they had the power to kill him if he crossed their paths? Did Paul have his prize? I have known hundreds of men and women who could not be bought. They would have joyfully given their lives for their convictions. If John the Baptist, Jeremiah, the Lord Jesus Christ, the Apostle Paul, and countless other faithful children of God had sold out, would they have been immoral and ethically weak? Yes, absolutely. That was John's reason for saying to the church at Smyrna, "Fear none of these things which you shall suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that you may be tried. And you shall have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life." Revelation 2:10. How utterly incomprehensible that a theologian should say that everybody has his prize, or even infer that he does. The Hebrew writer spoke of thousands and thousands of men and women who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured. Hebrews 11:33-35. Now a very important question. Do you honestly believe the Hebrew writer would have spoken in such glowing terms of these men and women of faith if they had their price? Please listen carefully to this last statement from the Hebrew writer. The ones of whom he had spoken would not accept deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Why did men like Abraham, Moses, Daniel, and Joseph not sell out when they had the opportunities to do so? Did these men and women of God have their prize? Such a suggestion is insulting to God's faithful servants, both in Bible times and today. But by the very nature of the case, situationists like Joseph Fletcher and his protege, Wesley Baker, will sell out, although in many cases they have no convictions to sell. They allow the situation to dictate what they believe, preach, and practice. I wonder whether or not they allow the situation to determine whether or not they accept situation ethics. Or is situation ethics absolutely right on every occasion, regardless of the situation? Is situation ethics a genuine, bona fide absolute? Let me read one more statement from Fletcher's book, Situation Ethics. In situation ethics, even the most revered principles may be thrown aside if they conflict in any concrete case with love. Page 33. If one is tempted to discriminate on the basis of race or color or national origin, could he throw aside the principle that God is no respecter of persons and practice discrimination on what he perceives to be love? If Fletcher responds by insisting that one cannot discriminate against others if he truly loved them, what principle would he introduce which would show absolutely that discrimination is always wrong? I am aware that Fletcher teaches that the only absolute is love, the agape love of 1 Corinthians 13, but he fails to tell us what guidelines to follow to make sure we truly love. In other words, Joseph Fletcher does not provide us with any content for love. Could a man commit adultery, lie to his wife about his sexual indiscretion, and still love his wife? Would adultery and lying be wrong, always wrong? How could he possibly condemn adultery and lying as always being wrong when he says, "The new morality, situation ethics, declares that anything and everything is right or wrong, according to the situation"? page 124. Does our study today of the question, "Are there any absolutes?" help you to understand many of the abominable evils of our day? Leading television evangelists who become involved in sexual immorality. Prominent politicians who use their positions to fatten their own bank accounts. A nation which kills 1,600,000 babies every year for the convenience of their mothers. Bankers who become rich by misusing their customers' funds. And fundraisers who live like kings while they are asking millions of Americans to sacrifice for good causes. Are any of these activities always wrong? Please listen again to our next broadcast as we continue to examine the question, "Are there any absolutes?" Thank you for listening, and may God bless you.